We're drinking wine. Cheers.
Yeah.
Oh, it's been a weird night. He says, slurping. I felt a little bit intimidated. Masses of intellect in one room. I guess you didn't.
Where? Here?
No, not here. Here is all right. Most people don't even know what Twitter is. I thought, hang on, geek calendar. You're not on Twitter? No, I meant the Royal Society tonight. A lot of amazing books, a lot of amazing people, a lot of kind of science legends there as well, some old-timers.
Yeah, the Royal Society is it's a wonderful place to go. I recommend it if you can ever sneak in for a drink, because you'll always find someone who's done something astonishing. I mean, it is the oldest continuous scientific society in the world. 350 years this year. Newton, Hooke, and then onwards you go. All the great...
So what's the secret behind the funding?
Well, the Royal Society is funded by government and endowments. So, I'm funded by the Royal Society. I'm a Royal Society University Research Fellow at the moment, and that's essentially government granted. So it's an institution to be valued and supported, I think.
Undoubtedly. So this has been a scary week then, really, around science funding.
Well, and it was, I think, a triumph, both for the science community, the online community, Science is Vital. And actually, to be honest, credit has to be given to David Willetts, in particular, in my opinion, Vince Cable, but in particular Willetts, for he definitely understands that science is vital. He definitely understands that. And I think he convinced the Treasury, and credit has to be given, therefore, to George Osborne as well, because I think that I was astonished. I'm quite cynical about government, we had massive trouble in 2007 with the Science and Technology Facilities Council, particle physics, astronomy funding. Just a massive cock-up, and nobody fixed it. And so despite all the good that Labour did for science, in the end, they made a mess of physics and didn't fix it. And what I saw, I think, with this government, and I cannot believe it in a way, because I've become so cynical, is they responded to rational argument, a bit of political lobbying, a bit of internet lobbying, and they did the right thing, which is to protect the science budget as far as they could reasonably expect it to do. And I think that's a victory for us, actually, and a victory for science.
And definitely, there's a lot of happy people here in particular as well, because there were some Science is Vital people here I was talking to earlier on. Will the, I don't know, the horrors that might be happening and are happening to higher education affect how many people go into science, even if there's funding there?
Yeah, it's true to say that the university funding picture as a whole is problematic, because it's not clear how the reduction in HEFCE funding for teaching will... First of all, the shortfall is in principle made up by fees, by increased fees. It's not clear how that'll pan out. And I think socially, it's obviously a huge worry. I mean, it's a different model of funding universities. And it cannot be allowed to discourage people from poorer backgrounds to go into university. It's ridiculous. Not only because that's inequitable socially, but also because you have to pick from the best pool of talent you've got in a country. You know, an Einstein, the next Einstein, does not necessarily have to be born into a middle-class household. He could well be born on a housing estate somewhere in central London, and those people could be put off if they perceive they're going to be saddled with huge debts. So we've got to ensure that that doesn't happen, and it's not clear to me how that's going to be guaranteed at the moment.
When you put it like that, it's almost criminal as well when you think about, I mean, I imagine there'll be science for all campaigns cropping up, because it needs to be accessible. It's really, really important.
It's not only science. I mean, a university education should be available to all those who want it. It's a difficult question for a society, I suppose. I mean, you have 100% of the people in higher education until they're 21. It would be great, because I think it's profoundly important, I think, socially, to take people out of their hometown and expose them to bigger ideas and to a more diverse and a view of the world. And that's what university does at its heart. You know, it doesn't matter. You shouldn't see it as a production line to produce people who are fluent in a particular discipline in order to be fodder, cannon fodder for industry or something like that. You know, that's not the way you should think about it. You should think about an education as being something that benefits all of society. If you educate all your citizens, you have a better society. That's true, and it's acknowledged because we do educate everybody to the age of 16. So
yeah,
it's,
yeah.
The thing is, would it be beneficial to society to educate more people up to the age of 21? Particularly, I think, to move them out of their local area and expose them to a different geographical place and different ideas. That's vital. So it's a difficult... It's also expensive. So it's a very difficult conundrum. I don't envy the government.
No.
But I hope that we must actually ensure that they don't discriminate between people who are from lower income backgrounds, even if in practice you wouldn't, even if you have a system that says, well, you know, you don't have to pay back the loans that you get until you earn more than 30,000 a year or whatever it is. Even then, there's a psychological disincentive, I think, to people whose mummy and daddy haven't got 100 grand in the bank, and you've got to make sure that that's not true. But I'm sure people are aware of that as well.
Let's hope so.
I hope.
Mm. Were you a Y child all the way through?
Was I a...
A Y child?
Why?
Yeah, why is that like that? Why is that?
I think so, yeah.
Because sometimes that's enough for an education in a way, if you can get the answers.
Well,
I went to... I blagged myself into theoretical physics at Coventry University, just as it turned into university. But the pure maths just, well, almost made me want to shoot myself in the head. I just had a massive problem with it. I guess that's where your book would come in, because there's so many people tonight talking about how they were kind of softly nudged into remembering the maths that they did at school, and that it wasn't that complicated when you come back to it.
Very good point. It's much easier when you revisit it with the kind of
grown-up mind.
It really is. I mean, because I hated maths at school. I hated it. Even to A level, I just hated it. And then I went away for a bit and then went back to university and found at the age of 23, 24 that I could see through it clearly. And now, even more so. I mean, now, you know, I really am comfortable. But I'm not a natural mathematician at all. But you find that...
That's comforting to
know.
It
comes with age. It really does, I think. I should apologise to everyone who's listening because I've had several glasses of wine. So, but there we go.
Well, I'm not going to ask you to do any sums.
I think I'm ready. I have a friend, actually, a theoretical physicist from Russia. There's lots of, in the area that I work in, quantum chromodynamics, strong force, and things. A lot of Russian theorists are very good at it. And there's a cabal of them who are kind of in the 60s now, who worked at St. Petersburg, and a famous bunch of people. And they used to have competitions where they used to go for the whole weekend or days on end out into the Siberian wilderness, drink vodka, get so shit-faced they couldn't stand up, and then do sums, right, integrals. It was kind of a sign of manhood. It's like, integrate this, Vladimir.
I
can do it. And then so it was really in the Russian culture, and still is, right? Russian theoretical physicists calculate for fun. And
it's, whilst drunk.
Yeah, whilst hammered.
Part of my family is from that area, and it's where I got the... I blogged recently a gherkin and some vodka, and not many people got it, but it is from where my family is. You have that before dinner. You have a shot of vodka and a massive chunk of gherkin, and apparently you cannot have a hangover if you do that because gherkin's so heavy in fluid.
That's a very good tip.
And maybe there's some minerals there as well.
Let's go and try it.
And go to a gherkin vodka bar. I've tried to find them.
There must be some Stalingsnaya around. Where is it?
Yeah, exactly. But it was always lemon-flavoured. My family was only drinking... I thought they were a little bit less hardcore.
Yeah.
They're Ukrainian. Maybe that's the problem.
I'm not even going to go there. It's a minefield. It's a physical minefield.
Literally a minefield as well. Let's not go there at all.
No, it isn't. Ukraine is not a minefield. Oh, God.
I have been there, and I came back to tell the tale. Well, it's a brilliant place, fascinating night, and I've spoke to a lot of people who are not only passionate about science, they're passionate about learning, they're passionate about geekdom, and geek, it's weird, man. Only a few years ago, it was a derogatory word. Now, nerd is still a bit derogatory, but not as much.
Geek is there, isn't it? And I mean, just to be even serious for a moment, I mean, geeks are winning political victories, I think. I honestly think that this movement that we have, which is crystallised around several things, like libel reform and Robin Ince's Nine Lessons and Carols and You know, that movement, I think, played a role in supporting the science budget. And you can argue about how big a role that was, and many people have different opinions. But I think everyone recognises that Science is Vital played a role. And that was an online geek movement in the purest sense, I think.
So what is it? Is it the knowledge that geeks hold, or is it the passion that geeks hold?
It's passion, isn't it? If you're going to answer that, I think it's...
That's been a reoccurring theme tonight. A lot of people saying you have to want to do it. You have to be passionate about it.
And it's a belief in rationality, a passionate belief in rationality. Right. It's
a good title for a book.
It is, isn't it?
the next
write
one.
That down. I mean, I really think that there's a movement of people, there's a reaction against kind of superficiality and silliness and yeah, I think this movement encapsulates that. And obviously, the thing is, politicians are not stupid. Very few of them. One or two of them are. But most civil servants and politicians aren't. So I think they understand arguments. They want to see grassroots movements, I think, as well. I think it's really important. And I think science has suffered from being... It's suffered from being right, but not popular in a way. It's good. We've got half of it correct. We're right. That's half the argument. There's another half, which is popular and, you know, whatever you would call the geek movement. So I think it gives us the other half in order to... I think we can go a long way, actually.
Let's hope so. More passion, more geekdom. I guess power to the geeks, I guess.
Power to the geeks.
Brian, thank you very much. Chin chin.
Pleasure. Chin chin.